This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Ferguson is out, Holloway is in, the curse lives. When it rains, it pours. Matt Brown tears his ACL and is out of UFC Glendale. Stephen Thompson said he had never heard of Darren Till before he was approached to fight him. Same mistake that Cowboy Cerrone made. We'll see how that plays out. Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. If you are listening to the radio show, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, there's a lot more content there. We trimmed down the podcast for the radio to make it a radio-friendly format. So if you want more of Joe and I, please subscribe.
Which I think people should want more of me and you.
Yeah, I don't see why. More, you know how sometimes people say more is less?
Yeah.
More is more in this case.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. We're just giving them all this free information, all this great knowledge.
That's the crazy thing about podcasts.
They should be paying us for listening.
Podcasts are crazy because they're so good and they're free.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's where I get most of my listening to. I mean, it's the best. I stopped listening to music because of that.
Same with me. I used to listen to so much music, and now with these podcasts,
I'm like, I might as well learn something while I'm in the car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's changing, but I've stopped listening to music. I don't know.
Yeah, it's
who knows?
I wouldn't say I've stopped, but I've certainly listened to a lot less than I used to. And I used to listen to a lot of music. Where I find I listen to music the most is at my desk. I throw some jazz music on and it helps me focus on what I'm doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
My only listening would be working out. And it's in my earphones. That's about it. Other than that, as soon as I'm in the car, boom, right away a podcast is on.
Yeah, same with me. In the car, if I'm by myself, podcast. If I'm with my family, it's usually like kids' music.
The kids' music, yeah.
Yeah. I'm with my wife.
You don't get to control the radio anymore. It's too late.
You know what? I wish that they would invent this technology. Like some sort of speakers where you could listen, where each person could listen to a different thing.
Yeah. But we have headphones for that now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but it's not as nice. You can't really talk. Like, if your kids, like, you see parents now, kids are always on their iPad with their headphones, not talking to anybody. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, that'll be great down the line when my kids do that, because then I can just put on
whatever you want.
They want to listen to.
You can put us on and listen to us again.
Yeah. So, April Fool's Day came around. I don't know if anybody pranked you,
no.
But it felt like the MMA world was getting pranked when we found out that Tony Ferguson suffered an injury, a freak injury, that caused him to withdraw from this fight. A fight that's now been canceled in 2015, 2016, 2017, and now 2018 between Khabib and Tony Ferguson. Absolutely insane.
And I got that news right out of the plane, and it was your mess. Like, I had friends and you being like, oh, you know, he's out. And I was like, really? I was like, oh, it's April Fool's, man. I didn't get to read, and I wasn't.
Yeah. You didn't know how much was out.
I didn't know how much was out at that point, because I literally just got off the plane when I heard the news. I was like, it's got to be April Fool's, but nah. I don't know, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, we see Ferguson kicking poles and sharpening his elbows, and he trips over a cord at a TV studio doing his UFC media obligations and tears his LCL.
Yeah.
Ruptures his LCL.
And Dana was saying, that's it, never again.
Yeah, you know what, though?
Tony Ferguson
raises a good point. He goes out and does his media obligations. I don't know why Fox doesn't use gaffer tape for their wires. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
To trip over a cord means that it's not secured properly, but whatever. So let's say, maybe there was gaffer tape and he tripped over the gaffer tape. Who knows? But he's doing his media obligations for this fight, trips, ruptures his LCL, he has to pull out, and now they're taking the interim belt for him.
Yeah, that I don't understand. I think that's the stupidest thing. Like,
well,
how do you take his belt for it?
Apparently there was language in the contract for this fight that if either one of them was pulled, this fight would still be for the undisputed championship against another opponent.
Yeah.
Because Khabib was so focused on being the undisputed champion, and his agent, to his credit, I mean, if you can negotiate this, more power to you. His agent, Ali Abdelaziz, puts language in the contract that, and I don't know if it was just him, but because, I mean, Ferguson's manager is the same as Conor's manager, although I'm sure that he's probably not thrilled that they were taking the belt off Conor and now off his other client, Tony Ferguson. But there was language in the contract that if there was an injury, this would be an undisputed title fight against a different opponent.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's, from the situation that it happened, regardless of the language, it's got to have consistency amongst the board, in my opinion. Have a year, have some sort of, you know, expectations, obligations, or whatever you want to call it. But I think it's got to be consistent, and it shouldn't really be case by case, in my opinion.
So the opponent is now Max Holloway, the featherweight champion.
Yeah.
In terms of promotional value, I think he's the best opponent, because you actually give Conor, if Conor's going to fight the winner of this fight, it's actually a better storyline if he fights the guy who just won the championship in both divisions.
Yep.
Now, the deck is stacked against him. He hasn't been training. He's been injured. he takes this fight on short notice because, you know, that's how legends are made. Good for him. That's the mindset you want. It's like the mindset that you talked about last week. You know, nobody's going to tell you that you can't beat Khabib on 6 days' notice.
Yeah, exactly. That's the mentality you need to be a champion. So once he got that call, he was like, hey, that's how legends are born.
Yeah.
Take the fight. Like, he, in his mind, no one in the world can beat him.
Yeah.
In his mind, no one in the world can beat him, so why not?
And he says he thinks Khabib is the best mixed martial artist in the world, and he wants to beat the best mixed martial artist in the world.
And a lot of people are talking about the weight differential, but really, it's I think Holloway's having a hard time making the
weight. Holloway's going to have to cut
apparently, more weight. Apparently, they even asked for a catch weight, I heard somewhere. Like, he would rather take the fight at 170 than at 155, so he's got to be a big boy right now.
Well, it's not just that. He also needs to. He hasn't been training, so his weight's probably up as a result of that. Plus, with the ankle injury, it's going to be hard for him to do the exercises needed to cut the weight.
To cut that weight, yeah, that road work some guys do, or
yeah,
I don't know. But I mean, he's confident. Size isn't going to be an issue. I think in his fights, I think he's been taken down once in his last 9 fights.
Yeah, I posted that stat. He hasn't been he's been taken down once since, I think it was like the end of 2014 or something.
Yeah, so his takedown defense is there.
But we're talking about a different animal here.
Yeah, exactly.
To say that he stuffed takedowns from Ricardo Lamas and Jose Aldo, who didn't even attempt a takedown.
It was just more to set up his striking.
Yeah, so the stat is true. He has only been taken down once since 2014, but he hasn't fought anybody whose specialty is wrestling. Like, he hasn't fought like a Chad Mendez or anything along those lines, or a Uriah Faber, something along those lines that would challenge his takedown defense. Whereas Khabib, like, he can put anybody on his back, except for, I guess, that one fight with Gleison Tibau, where Gleison Tibau stuffed like 9 takedowns.
I still think it's probably going to be easier for Khabib to take down Ferguson than it is for Holloway. I think Holloway, as a striker, has better understanding of distance control, you know, uses his reach a little bit better than Ferguson. So I think his takedowns defense is probably better than Ferguson.
Yeah.
But the only difference is, I think Ferguson is better on the ground, on his back, to do some, you know, create more damage on the floor, where Holiday's going to have to try to scramble and try to get back up and take advantage of those exchanges. You got to take advantage of him coming in. You got to hit him. He has those quick little opportunities to capitalize on it.
Yeah, there's a big difference between Ferguson wanting to be taken down almost because he knows he can do damage off his back, as opposed to Holloway, who really can't do too much off of his back and probably won't be able to stand if he is taken down. That said, if I see like a plus 400 number next to Max Holloway's name against anybody in the world, that seems absurd to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense given the circumstances. You're against a guy whose, you know, wrestling pedigree is great. He's a weight class above what you're used to fighting. 6 days' notice, ankle injury. Like, all these things are the reason why Holloway is such a big underdog in this fight. But, I mean, I think Max can beat him.
Yeah, he can. But
I think that there's more of a chance. Like, I'd say there's an 80% chance that Khabib wins this fight, but 20% isn't that big of a difference. Like, I'm going to do that right now. You talk. I'm going to convert 80% into odds.
Okay, because my thing is, sometimes a lot of quick notice fights, the psychology is different. When you have a full camp and you have to think every day for 8 weeks about your opponent, you get stressed out, the nerves, you know, all those stress hormones are released in your body. That plays a lot of mind tricks on you and it messes with you. But if you have short camps, I've seen so many guys, even my fighters at Bazooka Kickboxing, once you have those short notice fights, you don't have that time to be nervous. You don't have that time to overthink yourself, and you just go in and you be the best you. And a lot of times when you're in a full camp, your conditioning is the worst near the end of your camp because you've drained your body, you've had to cut so much weight, you know, all that stress adds up and you're not always the best because of that. So, hey, it could be an advantage for Max Holloway if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you raised very good points there. With Holloway, yeah, I think you nailed it. With distance, that's what the difference maker is going to be. But, I mean, I don't think Khabib is that afraid of the striking of Max Holloway. We're not talking about a crazy power striker. He's the type of guy that, you know, he pounds the rock. He just keeps hitting the rock until the rock breaks.
But you got to look at one like Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor fought. If good distance control, good timing, if he's backing up, and then shoots and, you know, it doesn't take much. If you have Khabib coming forward, you have Holloway managing his distance, staying nice and long. As soon as he meets, he can catch a move. Jose Aldo, when he got knocked out, went for this power combination from the outside. Khabib has to close the distance. Holloway keeps it, and if he can time it, he's got a good chance.
So
I mean, it's all about distance control for Holloway.
Here's a question I want you to think about. Who do you think at 145 or 155 would have been the most dangerous opponent to take on Khabib on short notice?
I like that Ortega wanted
that's
the
what
fight.
I was thinking, too.
Yeah, I like that. Or yeah. Brian Ortega
they
wanted
it to
take
him,
that
apparently.
Fight.
Yeah, they offered it to him.
I like that.
If Max would have turned it down. To me, that would have been
I like that.
The kind of matchup where Khabib would have had some trouble. Because if Khabib went to take Ortega down, yeah. I mean, feel free.
Grab
but
your
Ortega's
neck.
Will grab your neck. He's got crazy jiu-jitsu off the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, a top-heavy Khabib is hard to get off of you, regardless of how good your BJJ is. But in terms of matchups, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, I like that, too. I thought it was good. He was probably the second option. He was probably close.
Another interesting one that what I think could have been very interesting is Justin Gaethje, because Gaethje's got a full camp right now. He's fighting next weekend.
But his
got a wrestling pedigree though. He's a Division I wrestler. Like he doesn't have a.
But
bad
I just think
pedigree.
The way he's been fighting, it doesn't really show a style that would be good for Khabib, based on him standing his ground, wanting to strike. That's a wrestler's dream.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, that's very
that's
true.
That's a wrestler's
that
dream.
That said, he's got that sick uppercut that he throws. Yeah. And you got Khabib
that's
coming
his one
in.
Shot. Yeah, yeah, that's his one shot. But
and even Poirier. Like, Poirier is a guy that I think would have been interesting as well.
Yeah. No, they all would have been
good
matches.
Options,
but
yeah.
I just think this makes it interesting. And I think, maybe if you want to look down the line, this sets up a good Conor match, because that seems to be the storyline, too. The winner of this fight wants Conor McGregor. So now, if you have Max Holloway, for example, you're talking about he holds the same two titles that Conor McGregor had. If you look at now Khabib can say, well, I'm the 155 champ, and I just beat the 145 champ. So regardless, it's going to want Conor McGregor to get back in there more, and it just sets up a bigger fight. So I think the UFC likes that path a lot better than an Ortega or Gaethje,
and I think that's why Holloway takes this fight, not just because he thinks he can beat Khabib, but this is the easiest path to a big money fight with McGregor
for sure.
And you're talking about a guy like you mentioned, the story would be easy to set up. You got the guy who just won the two belts at the same time, the second person to ever do it. The first person's McGregor never lost either of those belts. You've got the guy holding those two belts.
See, the issue is with Holloway, like, he's going to give up his big win streak, which is what, I think 11?
He's at 12 right now.
12 right now, okay. Yeah. So he gives up his win streak. But, like, it sets him up to have a lot of excuses out, which is kind of a positive thing as a fighter, right?
But let me just point this out. He loses this fight. He still won 12 straight at featherweight.
Yeah.
People can still say that.
And he's still the champion at featherweight. He doesn't lose his title. It just gives him an option to be a legend, like he said. Like, I'm going to jump on it.
He has losses on his record. He's not undefeated.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, and it just sets him up closer to Conor. If he wins, he becomes a big, giant superstar. I think it's, again, he's got so much to go. And if he loses, he's like, I lost to a guy in a bigger weight class on 6 days' notice. My ankle was bad. He can say whatever the heck he wants because he has those protection, excuses for when he loses. Or if he loses, sorry.
So what's your strategy if you're Max Holloway? If you want to win this fight, Joe Valtellini, you're coaching Max Holloway. What do you tell him to do?
You got to keep your distance, my man. Don't, like, he can't get overexcited with his striking. He's going to have to use the jab, try to bait him in. That's what we call draw attacks. You got to try to pull Khabib in, pull him in, and then just try to strike and move. Throw in singles and move. Throw in singles and move. If you try to sit there and set your feet to throw something, Khabib's under you and you're on your back. So you're going to have to kind of hit and keep moving your feet. Keep circling. Use your angles. Don't let him touch you. And I can get very technical about neutral stances and backstepping, but you got to just learn how to manage distance. If he can step back, and I like that Holloway, a good thing is Holloway can fight in both stances. He can fight orthodox and southpaw, so he's going to have to really switch his feet to keep that single from happening. So hopefully he knows. He's a smart guy. I think it's just keep your distance, move, and take advantage of the transition of Khabib wanting to come in. Take your time on the outside. You haven't had a full camp. We don't know your conditioning, even though he's known for good conditioning. He's going to have to take his time on the outside. Don't rush it. Throw in singles and move.
Yeah. I feel bad for Tony Ferguson, because if, as Dana White says, he's never going to make that fight with Khabib again, and Khabib wins this,
Ferguson's on
a 10 or 11 fight win streak at lightweight. But if Poirier beats Gaethje, you can make a case that Poirier's next in line if Conor's not going to fight Khabib.
So
Ferguson is like basically in a holding pattern here. The only option where I think Ferguson could really benefit is if he moves up to 170, which he's talked about in the past. He won the Ultimate Fighter at 170. The weight cut is tough for him. It builds a lot of intriguing matchups, because if you got a Darren Till beating, let's say Darren Till beats Wonderboy, hypothetically, he's now the number one contender. Ferguson comes in and says, I want to fight Darren Till. That's a great fight.
Yeah. But wasn't there rumors Khabib wanted to leave too? Like, he didn't have many fights left. I heard rumors of him going to welterweight as well. So
they said
maybe
that,
he doesn't want to stay there long either.
But,
and then that's,
you know, after
Ferguson.
His last fight, he said, I think I can make weight at featherweight. Like, he's starting to walk around a lot lighter. The weight cut doesn't look like it's going to be an issue for him going forward. If you saw what he looked like when he was sitting with Ariel Helwani yesterday, it did not look very big.
Yeah,
I think his weight cut's going to be easy from here on out if he's doing it the right way and he's got George Lockhart's team, Tyler Minton, helping him cut weight. It's weird. Tyler Minton and Lockhart are helping Joanna, Max, and Khabib all cut weight.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
That's
Rose,
insane.
I don't think cuts much weight to begin with.
No. But, apparently, are we going to move on?
We can move on to Joanna and Rose. Is that where you're going?
Sure. No, I was going to talk about how Joanna was blaming all that loss on her nutrition. So she says she has it under control.
You know, the crazy part about that story is she was working with Perfecting Athletes. She was living with Perfecting Athletes. Paulina from Perfecting Athletes was with her everywhere she went, media tours everywhere, monitoring everything she put in her body. And their mentality was that she should walk around heavier. Like, on a day-to-day basis, she should walk around a little bit heavier eating healthy foods, and it'll be easier to take that weight off. That obviously was flawed because she had to cut 16 pounds in 14 hours.
Well, I mean, you would think at this point, though, in Joanna's career, she has the formula already. Like, what is taking her so long to figure out what works for her and what doesn't? I don't understand. You shouldn't be trying new things.
She had worked with Perfecting Athletes for, I think, her two or three fights prior. They all went off seamlessly, but there was a hiccup with this one, and what she said to Ariel yesterday was, I'm taking charge now. I'm not letting somebody else decide everything I eat. I know what I'm going to eat. I'm going to stay light, and then when it comes to fight week, that's when I'll call on somebody because I need to focus on the fight itself. I'll bring in a nutritionist to help me with the last little bit. I mean, she was weighing 125 pounds last week. Cutting to 115 now should be no problem.
What drives me nuts, why do people need nutritionists? Like, you're a professional athlete. Don't you want to learn about your body, learn about what works well for you? Like, I didn't need a full nutritionist, someone making food. You got to learn. Fighters, and I mean, I see it in kickboxing and athletes all the time. I'll ask them about their weight cut routine, and they're like, I don't know how to cut weight. What do you mean you don't know how to cut weight? If you have to study, learn, Google. There's so much resources out there. Do you really need someone telling you? Your body reacts different. The first thing you're going to learn is, whether, you know, with nutrition in itself, is everybody reacts different. Someone could be on a high carb diet and feel great. And then you put someone on a high fat diet, they feel great. And then it doesn't work. I tried a low carb diet. It was terrible for me. I felt terrible. I couldn't recover. I had no energy levels. So what do? I don't just listen to someone. I understood that I need more carbs in my body. My manager and my strength coach is Costa Claudianos, and we're like, okay, you need to go add carbs now, because then I started feeling better. Let's lower our protein. It's very simple. People just need to start learning and trying to understand their body more. Like, it's not always having to get someone to do it. I mean, learn your body, see what responds well. I mean, it's good to have a nutritionist, but something like that, you're a professional. Make your weight. If it's too hard for you, find something. Cut weight a little earlier. Instead of an 8-week cut, go to 10-week cut. Figure it out. I mean, I don't understand.
I see what you're saying, but I think the perception among a lot of these high-level athletes is that they want to get any advantage they can. So if they have a nutritionist, that person will help them put weight on in a better
psychological
fashion.
Psychological for them.
I think so, too. I think it's a crutch. Like, I think that
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that they use it as a way of saying, if something messes up, I can blame this person.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
Absolutely.
And if it works and things go really well, this person's helping me get to a point where, you know, I'm at my optimal health. And it's just a mental thing. Like, a lot of the reasons why people use performance-enhancing drugs is because they have in the back of their head, I use this. I'm unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm unstoppable
they
without this. And now I have this, and
they
I'm
need
even
that
more
mental crutch.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the fighters, and I don't want to, you know, put them down, but this is just my opinion, a lot of them have a nutritionist because they think that it's going to be, like, that they can rely on that person to make them have the optimal weight going into a fight, can help them cut weight in the easiest way, not have to worry about it going into fight week. And then also, if something goes wrong, they have someone to blame.
Like, I think if you want to use a nutritionist for, like, hey, maybe you should add a little bit more vitamin. You need a little bit more omega-3 fish oils. You need to add maybe a little bit more magnesium in your diet. Those are things you might want to get and understand. Okay, I'm a little tired. You might need a little bit more iron in your diet. All of those things make sense. Or if you have someone, you know, they want to cook your food for you, but you should have an understanding in every aspect of your career. I don't think you should ever, even your strength coach, if you, you should understand, why is your strength coach making you do this? You need to know these things. I don't understand why fighters are just so okay with just going with things and letting people do things. Learn. I look at camps as study. Look down, write things down. I didn't feel this good. Last camp, I was at this weight. You have to learn and understand your body a little bit more. It's part of being a professional athlete. You need to understand these things.
So what Joanna said was that, as I mentioned, she had to cut 16 pounds in 14 hours. She said she only got a cumulative 30 hours of basically nap time overnight and was exhausted the next day. Are those the kind of things that can affect you mentally in a fight, where you go into a fight and you're like, all this stuff? Or is that the kind of thing where once that's over with, you make the weight, it's like, okay, it's fight time. Do you think that she's using it as an excuse, in other words?
I think so, for sure. She's fought so many times before. She's cut weight so many times before. She probably responded poorly to the way her body was reacting. You know, and for women to cut weight, it's really tough. When they have that time of the month and they're going through their cycle, it's hard. They hold water at that time. That can be an issue as well. With hormone levels changing, you're holding water. It's different. But, I mean, she's done it so many times. You have to know your body. You got to know where you are. If you're 4 weeks out and you're not where you were, you know, your last camp where you felt good, there's something called fasted cardio. You know, you got to wake up, do a little bit more cardio rounds. A lot of fighters say they like fighting lower because it forces them to do more cardio. Like if a heavyweight is not going to do those extra rounds, they're not going to go and do that extra round on the bag, those extra sprint rounds, that extra this, because they don't have to. So a lot of guys, when they have to, they put that extra work in. And I think, I don't know, she's got to be a little bit better at it. Missing weight is unprofessional in my eyes, and you can't use it as an excuse.
So the odds for this fight are just about even. It surprises me. I actually thought Joanna would be a bigger favorite for this fight, not bigger than when she was last time, because I think she was like a 4-1 or more favorite last time. But it seems like the perception of her has changed. We've seen her lose. Do you think that people are a little bit too quick to anoint Rose as the next one? And are writing Joanna off, or do you think that that's the right way to be thinking? You think that Rose is going to be the toughest opponent Joanna's had to date and can beat her again?
You got to think, Rose caught her, right? It wasn't like a beatdown. I mean, if Rose never got that hook that knocked her out, like, what would have happened? I still think it was really early to write Joanna off. I think still, in my eyes, Joanna should be a heavier favorite, seeing which and how dominant she was before that loss.
Well, here's how I think this fight's going to play out. It's a 5-round fight. Joanna has the ability to win every round on the feet. I mean, if it stays standing, even though Rose knocked her out last time, and Rose could easily knock her down and finish her again. I don't know how about easily, but she could do it. We've seen it happen. Joanna, if she is able to implement her game plan, you know, use mostly striking, good distance control, get in and out like she has against other opponents, she could easily win a decision here.
Yep, I agree.
The big X factor to me is Rose's takedowns. Because Rose has very crafty takedowns, crafty trips. She's able to get in close. If she's able to, I mean, Joanna has not really fought anybody aside from Claudia Gadelha, who's given her the two hardest fights she had to date before that last Rose fight, that have really good ground games. And Rose, you know, her wrestling is better than what Claudia Gadelha's is, and she has very crafty submissions. If she's able to get Joanna to the ground even once, that could change the entire fight. That could be a sub victory that she can pull out of her hat at any time. And that's really where I think this fight's going to... What I think is the most likely scenario that's going to end up is that sometime within 5 rounds, Rose gets her to the ground and is able to submit her. Because that's what I think Joanna's weakness is.
Yeah, absolutely, if that's going to happen. But I don't know, I just think Rose... It's not, I don't want to say she got lucky, but that mentality, when you knock someone out and that feeling, if you have to fight them again, you have that little bit of overconfidence that I'm going to hit you and you're going to put it out. It was the right timing, the right shot. I'm hoping Rose isn't overly confident in her striking now, because now if she's going to want to sit there and strike and exchange punches with Joanna, I still think she needs to be smart and intelligent. Take her time and try to go for those takedowns. But my heart, you know, is leaning towards Joanna winning a decision. But I like Rose. I would like Rose to continue to be the champion. But I think I see Joanna winning a decision.
Yeah, this is a pretty, like, the odds for this are pretty close. So, and as I said, I think Joanna probably should have been favored more. I think that a lot of people have given up on her.
She's 14-1.
Yeah.
She only has one loss.
Yeah.
But you know,
at the same time,
you're fighting one loss.
I just think, well, yeah, you're fighting the same person that you lost against. Not to mention, I just think Rose's ground game is really, really underrated and could pay off big for her in this fight, even if she's down 3 rounds.
I hope so. I'm cheering for Rose. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm definitely cheering for Rose.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. I mean, I don't really like picking a horse in a race in terms of saying like I'm cheering for anybody, because I don't, as you know, as somebody who's covering the sport, I can't really say I'm cheering for anybody. Just in my mind, when I see the way these things play out, and every fight that I see lined up, I always play it out in my head.
Yeah.
And whatever like my instinct is, that's, you know, that's what I kind of go with. And that's what I kind of see happening here, is I see it being a stand-up fight for a lot of it, but I think that Rose is able to get just one takedown at some point. And if she's able to get to keep Ioana on the ground, that's going to be...
break some of her confidence.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a problem for Ioana. Because Rose on the ground is a different animal. And Rose hung with her on the feet last time, knocked her down, and then knocked her out, right? So, you know, there were two separate knockdowns that happened in that first round. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the odds indicate that they think there's a good chance this fight goes the distance. And if it goes the distance, Ioana almost certainly will win it.
Yeah, I agree. All around.
Calvin Kattar. We got to start pronouncing it.
Calvin Kattar
against Renato Moicano. That's an interesting fight. Kattar's been really hot. He's been winning all of his fights. He's been an underdog in every one of his fights. Whereas Moicano's been a favorite in most of his fights. Now the line is kind of flipped. This is just going to be really a big litmus test for where both these guys are, because if Calvin Kattar gets a win here, he's the real deal. He's going to be a top 8, top 7 featherweight. Moicano was beating Brian Ortega in his last fight. I mean, it was one round apiece before Moicano got caught in a submission in the third round. So Moicano had a shot. He was one round away from beating Brian Ortega, and it's his only loss.
And it's his only loss.
So are people writing off Moicano? I wouldn't. I think Moicano should be favored in this fight. But at the same time, Calvin Kattar's shown that he can beat just about anybody. I mean, he beat undefeated Shane Burgos, knocked him out.
Yeah.
So this is a tricky one to call.
Yeah, it's super tough. I think a lot of people are leaning towards Kattar. But yeah, I can't. Moicano, you can't write him off, man. He's slick. He's got a win over Jeremy Stephens. Like, that in itself is, you know, a huge
Jeremy
accomplishment.
Stevens is one number one or two contender right now.
Yeah, his fight's with Aldo. He's got Aldo next, right?
Well, apparently. It hasn't been signed yet, but it will be in Singapore, and that's apparently what they're saying is going to happen.
I hope so. Yeah, I think Stevens deserves that fight.
Yeah, and it's also a good way for Aldo to get back on the horse if he still got something, you know?
Yeah.
But this particular fight, like, I think Moicano, if he can get this down to the ground as well, he's got some really slick submissions too. He's got really good chokes, and I'm leaning him in this fight, but I don't know enough about these two guys and to really say one way or another who has an advantage here. I know that Kattar's had the hot hand, right? You know, as of late, he's been beating guys that he's been, you know, an underdog against, and now that momentum has carried him to be a favorite against the guy who is used to being a favorite. So it's one of those weird situations. Yeah. Chiesa Pettis, that's an interesting one.
That one, to me, is one of the more interesting ones on the card.
For sure. It's really going to be the big test of where Pettis is at, because Pettis is likely the toughest opponent that Chiesa has faced to date that he hasn't beaten. Like, I mean, Chiesa has lost to Jorge Masvidal. He tapped with it at 4:59. He lost to Kevin Lee when he didn't tap. It's kind of a weird loss.
I still think he lost, though, in my opinion.
Yeah, he would. I think he probably would have gotten choked out if that continued. And then there was he lost to Joe Lauzon by a doctor stoppage due to a cut in a fight that he was winning. So Chiesa's losses have come under pretty strange circumstances, but at the same time, you know.
And big names, too,
Anthony
right?
Pettis, yeah, those are big names. And Anthony Pettis has lost really the big names over the last couple of years. Lost to Holloway. He's lost to Poirier.
Yeah, Pettis doesn't have easy fights.
No.
There's no easy fights for Pettis.
Jim Miller was kind of an easy fight for him, and that was his last win. But that was probably the lowest, basically the lowest ranked guy that he could have fought.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. When Pettis has his momentum and he's on his best, like he's vicious, man. Yeah. Like he could easily, he just needs to find his momentum again. And he just had some bad streaks against really good guys. So it's not like I can really take anything away from him. Yeah. But I just think the Chiesa style is tough for him, right?
Yeah, he's going to be
because he's had that
really
grinding.
Tall.
Yeah, tall grinder, southpaw. Yeah. But Pettis fights well against southpaw. You know, he's got a good striking pedigree with Duke Rufus.
I think Pettis is southpaw too, is he not?
Yeah, I think so. And he has the ability to switch. I know that too. So I think that's a good advantage. But Chiesa grinds you. His ground is good.
He's good standing too.
Yeah, he's rangy, awkward. So for me, this is one of the hardest fights if I had to pick a winner.
Yeah, I'm really leaning Chiesa because I just don't know how much Pettis has left in the tank. But that said, I mean, Pettis is losing to really good fighters. So it's tough. This is really just the big test to see where Anthony Pettis is at in his career. If he loses this fight, he's going to be a gatekeeper, and that's just probably what's left of his career.
And I like Pettis, man, to see all the amazing things he's done, and especially in the WEC with the Showtime kick and me being friends with Duke Rufus. I really hope, you know, Pettis can come back and really show the Showtime that he is.
Aya Kinta versus Felder. We discussed this a little bit last week because Felder was your first pick. We did our picks last week. My pick was Tony Ferguson, so that's going
to
be null and void. Void, and I'm going
to
have to pick two new ones. But we have a bigger menu this time around. Last week, not all the odds were out.
Yep.
So we've got Aya Kinta and Felder. You like Felder in this fight. Explain.
I just think Felder's been his ground and pound is really strong. He's on good momentum recently. Man, and being an analyst myself, and I just realized how much my fight IQ has grown being an analyst, and just his momentum. I mean, beating Charles Oliveira, pretty impressive. The way he's looked the last few fights, I think his low kicks are really strong. I think he's got good ground and pound, amazing elbows. He's got to finish, two performance bone. I think in his last three, he's got two performance bonuses. He's finishing guys. I just like his finish ability, man, and I just think he's got that power, the mindset now, and the IQ to do it. And I mean, from Al Aya Kinta, I've been hearing about injuries, a little bit of time off, so it just making me lean towards Felder.
Well, here's the weird thing about Aya Kinta. I think he's only fought once in the last 3 years, and it was a 49-second win over Diego Sanchez in the first round.
Yeah, and we haven't seen much, so we don't know, right?
That's the problem. Like, I think Aya Kinta is a better fighter all around. I've always thought that Al Aya Kinta is a fantastic fighter. Felder, though, is on a, like you mentioned, he's got a lot of momentum on his side now, and he's looking better and better. And the improvements can't be overlooked.
Well, Aya Kinta has got probably bigger wins in the UFC, right?
Oh,
he has
sure.
wins over Masvidal. Kevin Lee in the earlier days, Rodrigo Dam, who fought Antonio Carvalho, Ross Pearson, Joe Lozon, Diego Sanchez. So I think he's got the bigger names, but what have you been doing in that time? You got to look at momentum, and where Felder's finishing fights.
He's fighting tough guy after tough
fighting
guy.
Tough guy after tough guy, and that ability, I'm telling you, guys aren't... Being an analyst has been so amazing for my martial arts development, and I can probably see that with Felder. He's studying, study, study. When you're a fighter, you don't study tape. You rely on your team to do that. My fight IQ's gone crazy since I've become an analyst, so I think that's going to be a good advantage for him.
Yeah, very well could. Felder himself has said, I don't really know where Aya Kinta's at right now. He can study him all he wants, but Aya Kinta is basically you're basically 3 years removed from seeing what the finished product is right now. So it's an interesting fight. I lean Aya Kinta a little bit, but the way I see this playing out in my head, again, if you want to hear how I imagined it, is these two guys standing and trading, and whoever puts on a better technical performance or gets a knockdown, it's going to be a game of inches in this fight.
Yeah,
this is
absolutely.
One that's really,
it's a
really
close
tough
fight.
To call. Yeah.
I just like that momentum, man. I'm telling you, I think Felder's he's on a new level. I still can't believe he's not ranked yet. I would have thought he would at least, would have cracked the rankings. Aya Kinta's ranked 11th. Felder's not ranked yet.
Yeah, well, that's strange. Felder should be ranked.
You would think
that's
so.
Very odd.
I'm on the UFC website right now.
That's very odd. Especially with a win over Oliveira and the way he did it. Ray Borg-Moreno is the last fight on the main card. I guess, the first fight on the main card. But the last fight for us to break down. Or is this on the prelims? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, it's either on the prelims or it's on the main card. I don't really know. I can't remember.
It's on the prelims.
It's on the prelims. Okay,
yeah.
So let's go with Karolina Kovalkiewicz and Felice Herrig. That's the main event of the prelims.
Yeah.
I just think Kovalkiewicz is going to run away with this one. She's a big favorite, and I think that's for a reason. Herrig has really done a lot lately. She's won 3 in a row. It's the longest win streak in strawweight right now. Big win over Courtney Casey, split decision, but she looked really good in that fight. But I just think Caroline is just a step ahead of her and offers more on the feet and should be able to pick her apart in that regard.
Which is surprising because Felice has a great Muay Thai background. Her kickboxing is her first love. Like, I first, because Felice is a friend of mine, so... I'm gonna have to pick her to win. I can't go against my friend. But
I like when we go against each other. So please feel free.
But I mean, Felice, when I first before I even became friends with her, I saw her on a Muay Thai reality show, and that's where I knew her from. It was Master Toddy, if those Muay Thai listeners will know. It was called Fight Girls, and she was on a whole show. She fought all mostly Muay Thai, and then made her transition. And she's just hitting her stride now with her wrestling. And I think it was two fights ago, they were calling her the ground specialist. And she even said after, she was like, ground specialist? What are people talking about? I'm a striker. I'm a Muay Thai fighter. I'm not no wrestler and all of this. But so if it's on the feet, I give Felice the advantage. So I don't know. I hope. And listening to a lot of other analysts give predictions, a lot of people are going for Felice. So I'm hoping that she does well and has a good performance nonetheless.
Yeah, Carolina's just such a buzzsaw on the feet. But, you know, you bring up good points. You know, if Herrig has seen her share of stand-up fights has done well, because Carolina's probably not going to try to take this to the ground or anything like that. This could be a three-round stand-up fight. It's actually a very good matchmaking.
Oh, I think it's right on. And Felice is, you know, she's getting up there in age. So this is her really good crack. Like, she cracks here, and she's close to another title.
Yeah.
She can go for a title shot.
And Carolina loses, she's basically a gatekeeper. She lost to Gedalia, and if she loses to Herring, then that's probably what her status will be in the, you know, at least until she gets some bigger wins. Yeah. Moreno versus Borg. The odds on this strike me as very strange. Like, I think that Borg should be a favorite, but I don't know about this big of a favorite. To me, this goes three rounds. Borg has way more tools.
Absolutely.
Way more tools.
Absolutely.
But Moreno's stand-up is really on point for a flyweight, and he's looked really good in that regard. Now, the key here is if Borg can get this to the ground. I mean, Moreno versus, like, a Pettis, you know, Pettis beat him standing. But Borg just has so many more ways to win this fight.
Yeah,
that's why I think
the
odds are so long. And I do lean Borg in that regard. But Moreno is a tough kid, and he's just getting, every fight, he just seems to be getting exponentially better. His growth is really something to watch and something to behold. So,
and how old is Moreno?
I'm not reading him off. He's young. He's like 22 or 23.
I'm going to check his profile here.
I remember when him and Pettis
24.
Fought. Yeah, he's like 24. So him and Pettis are around the same age. That was a really good fight. But, you know, Moreno's got good chokes. He's got good good stand-up. Borg should be able to get this done, but I'm not gonna write off Brandon Moreno. I think he's a very good prospect.
But definitely big advantage. Not a huge advantage, but the ability to take the fight where he wants is going to be, you know, Borg's advantage.
Yeah, Lozon Grutzemacher is not a fight that I have a very good read on. I can't really figure out what's going to happen in this fight. Lozon should have the advantage, and I just haven't seen a lot from Grutzemacher since coming to the UFC. And that's
what
the
problem
is.
Even know much about him at all.
Yeah, like in his last fight, he was doing really well against Davi Ramos and then got caught. I think it was a round apiece. And then Lozon, I believe, lost his last fight, but he also...
Yeah, his last, Clay Guida.
Right, he got grounded out by Clay Guida.
Yeah, round one.
Yeah. So, that was where Guida knocked him out, right? And that was
It says round one, KO, TKO.
Yeah,
I'm not
that was
sure
Guida's first knockout win in like 12 years.
Ever,
or
yeah.
Yeah, so that's... I was trying to remember who that was against, actually. So, you know, Lozon could be, you know, past his peak. But that said, I haven't seen enough from Grutzemacher to think that he's going to pose much of a challenge for Lozon.
The problem is with Lozon, when you think of Lozon, you think about his past. Like, I'm trying to see how many UFC fights he's even had.
So many.
It's like, it's crazy.
He's been around since I started following the sport. He had that win over Jens Pulver back in the day when he was a giant underdog as a newcomer. And that's when I first started hearing about Joe Lozon.
25 UFC fights, I just counted.
And Grutzemacher's got, what, four?
Yeah,
three?
Probably around that.
So,
I mean,
and Grutzemacher trains at the MMA lab. But, you know, Lozon, again, like you said, experience can't be, you know, overlooked in this fight. And I think Lozon has more ways to win. I just don't know what Chris Grutzemacher is at this point.
Yeah, we're going to have to see.
Yeah.
He's going to have to bring a good package.
I do think that this fight ends within the distance, though.
Okay.
Beck Rawlings, Ashley Evans-Smith. Another kind of tough one to call because Beck hasn't looked very good in recent fights. And Ashley Evans-Smith got submitted by Sarah Morris in Edmonton. But I think Evans-Smith is the far more dangerous fighter in this fight. And I certainly, I think that she's going to be able to beat Beck Rawlings. I think she's just a little bit more dangerous. And if you can find some sort of prop for her to win inside the distance, I think that's worth a look. Because I know that that the fight going the distance alone is like plus 240.
Okay.
So if you can find Evans-Smith inside, I think that's worth a look.
That's worth a look.
But I think that Evans-Smith wins this one.
What about Dunham and... OAM there.
Yeah, that's kind of early in the card. I think that one's actually going to be on TSN, but that's
a
tough
that's
one
the first
to call
fight
also.
That's the first fight on the TSN card.
First fight on TSN, okay. Yeah, that's a really tough one to call also. I mean, this is the thing. Like, a line came out for this, and it was, fight goes the distance was like minus 140, and then now it's almost at minus 300. A lot of people think this is going to go to decision. And if it goes to decision, I think Olivier is the person I would favor. I think he's going to be able to wrestle with Dunham, and if he can avoid getting caught in any sort of chokes, he should be able to ground out a win. He's also, I think, you know, very good on the feet from a technical standpoint. I think Dunham has more power. I think Dunham has more ways to win, but I think Olivier has a better way to win, if that makes sense.
And I think even with Dunham, I think the question is, it's the mileage. He's got a lot of mileage on him, where Olivier's fresh, young, you know, he's in the newer breed of MMA, where Dunham is the old school, man. Like, he's probably not even that old, but he's been around.
Yeah,
you know, he's definitely. Oh, he's pretty. He's up there. He's 36 years old.
Yeah, and Aubin Mercier, I think, is like 28 or something.
Yeah,
but it's a tough one to call. It's a very tough opponent for Aubin Mercier. It's as tough as I think to date.
But I think it's the perfect one for him.
Yeah, it's perfect.
He's been doing well, right? Yeah. It'll get him ranked. He's doing well. Evan Dunham's ranked the number 14.
Yeah, I certainly lean Olivier in this fight.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm not. And I don't know. It's just a dangerous fight for him.
And it's Canadian, too. We got to support us Canadians.
Absolutely. Artem Lobov, Alex Caceres. This should be a fun fight. But if it stays standing, Lobov certainly has a path to victory. But if Caceres is somehow able to get it to the ground, I don't know what Lobov's going to be able to do there against the guy who's as crafty as Caceres. Yeah. Caceres loses a lot of fights that he should win. That's the problem.
Yeah, like,
I
can never, like, so many times I put him on, like, little bet parlays, and he always messes me up. So I got to totally stay away from him. But I'm leaning towards Lobov for sure. But I don't know. Bruce Leroy there, I don't know. He never really overimpresses me. But sometimes he does. And then
that's the weird thing. Sometimes he pulls the rabbit out of his hat and he looks amazing.
Yeah, then
looks
the next fight you're like, what the heck happened?
That's not the same guy.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that. That's an interesting one. And again, I think staying away. And Rodriguez versus Clark, I don't know too much about.
Nope.
But Zabit Magomedsharipov and Kyle Bochniak is an interesting one because... Yeah. Bochniak looked very good in his last fight against Brandon Davis.
He's a wrestler-based or striking-based? Because if he's a striking-based, I think Zabit's going to be one of the toughest guys.
I called him out last year.
Zabit
is an 8-1 favorite, and I think he should be.
I'm kind of disappointed, though. I think this fight should be moved up.
Man. I agree. Everybody's
I don't know why.
It's,
why would it be the first fight on the prelims? I think that easily should be on the TSN portion.
Or even put on the main card and give the guy some shine.
Man, but, his striking, everybody wants to watch it. He's going to spin, his back kicks, his wrestling
his subs
is good.
Too.
His subs
let's,
are
let's
good,
not
too.
Undermine his subs.
Like, I don't know why he's the first fight. I mean, I think he's a guy that we need to showcase, you know, because he's exciting. We're talking about excitement and entertainment factor. He's the guy you put.
This is a fight he really should win. But I think Bochniak's a good fighter. I'm not going to write him off as being this is an absolute squash, but it should be an absolute squash.
What's the line on this fight?
It's -800 for Zabit.
Yeah.
So that's the part that makes me uneasy. Is it's a little bit.
It's hard. See, even as an analyst, I found this with my glory calls a lot of times. Everyone would be like, "Oh, this is a huge underdog." I was like, I always look at the other guy being like, "Well, he could do this," you know. I always try to bring out the positive in the underdog a lot of times, and then while I'm doing that, I'm like, "Well, he has a chance," you know. So I mean, it's tough to do that, but I mean, I like that you do that as well.
Yeah, like. I don't like
you'll never just write off a guy.
Yeah,
and I like
you
that
just
you
can't.
Do that.
I mean, Paul Craig is somebody that everybody wrote off. In the last fight. Now he was getting destroyed in that fight. He had lost 3 rounds up until the last second of that fight.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like on the ground, and this is what I said before that fight. Paul Craig is one of the best guys at light heavyweight in terms of submissions. He's crafty and he can pull
stuff. And he wanted to retire too. He was going to retire. Now he's like, hey, I'll probably stay back and stay in for a few more.
Yeah. Well, he was saying basically he didn't think the UFC was going to bring him back, and that's why he was thinking of retiring. Like he thought if he had lost another one, that it just wouldn't be worth it for him to work his way back to the UFC.
Yeah.
It is good for the UFC to have people from Scotland and some of these other regions where they bring events to in their organization.
Yeah, but that's a problem too. A lot of UFC fighters will only get in on the local circuit where they are. But if the UFC only comes to Scotland or wherever they are once a year, you're not fighting elsewhere. Like,
you'll
what
fight
do you
in
do?
Europe. You'll fight elsewhere in Europe.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I mean,
hopefully.
That's what happened with that last fight. Where was that last fight? That
it's
was
like a lot of Canadians are in that case as well, too, right? A lot of times they only get put on Canadian cards.
Yeah, and they don't like that because it's tough for them to advance
their
ranking as a result. So we've gone through this this main card. Let's look at our bets. Last week you picked Paul Felder. The odds haven't really changed much for that.
Nope.
But do you want me to go first since I'm...
you go for it because you get that pick. So what are we doing? Another pick this time?
You're going to do one, and I'm going to do two, I guess, because mine from last week is now null and void.
All right.
I'm going to go with a parlay of Karolina Kovalkiewicz and Ashley Evans-Smith. That's going to be my my first play. And okay. I know you won't go with that because you like Herrig. So yeah. that's where I'm leaning with my first pick. Now you can make your second, or do you want me to go ahead?
No, you can go. I'm still looking here.
You're assessing the menu?
I'm assessing the menu.
I'm going to go with Michael Chiesa as my second pick at minus 135 against Anthony Pettis. The line has flipped. Chiesa opened as an underdog, but I just can't. I think Chiesa's on the up and that Pettis is on the down, and we'll see if I'm right about that. But I just think Chiesa has shown a lot of improvement, whereas Pettis seems to be regressing a little bit. So I'm going to go with the upward trajectory versus the downward trajectory for that one.
I'm leaning towards Olivier, to be honest with you.
Plus money, why not?
At a plus 120, I'm going to go with Olivier. I think he's just a young, talented kid, and I think that mileage on Dunham, and I wasn't overly impressed with him in his last outing, so I'm going to go with OAM.
Awesome. Let's talk about a couple last things before we wrap up. Ronda Rousey, did you hear her interview with Brett Okamoto, or at least parts of it?
I've heard parts of it. I heard she, the one thing I took out of it right away was she wasn't really open to talking about her MMA career.
She spoke a little bit about it. I mean, Brett got more out of her when it comes to mixed martial arts and that part of her life than anybody else has since she's lost to Amanda Nunes. And she basically said she thought she overstayed her welcome. She thought that she gave more to the sport than she had to give because she was worried that they were going to shut down the women's division. She felt that the women's divisions wouldn't survive without her.
Okay.
Which is interesting because at that point in time, Joanna's already established. She's the champion. But
they didn't have the name and the weight
yeah.
that it had.
Yeah,
right?
Her pay-per-views were selling over a million, even with Nunes.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that was kind of what her thought process was. Not to mention, I'm sure she got paid a ton of money for that last one against Nunes. But that's what her thought was. That she just gave more than she had to give to the UFC, and she had, it was just a lot for her to carry.
I think a lot of it with her is it's all mental with her, right? I mean, if you ask her, I've heard interviews where she still harps on and she lost in the Olympics or something. Like she really holds on to losses. She doesn't know how to deal with, things out of her control maybe as much, and it just sticks with her and eats her away, and she can't mentally get over it. I mean, you should be able to talk about your losses eventually after this long. You've totally moved on from the sport. Why is it so haunting for you, Talk about it. I don't know why.
Yeah, it'd probably be cathartic, yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand why it's been so hard for her. I think it's just in her personality and her nature to hold on to things like that. She probably holds on to grudges a lot, too. Yeah. I mean, it's probably her personality.
Well, look at the Misha Tate thing. She wouldn't shake Misha Tate's hand at the
end. Yeah, I just think she's very intense, and that's what made her so successful, which, I mean, great. Look at her. She's doing amazing, great things, but sometimes you have to, go back and just talk about it. It's okay. I had a hard time talking about my loss with Nikki Holtzgen. I hated it. I still don't like talking about it that great, but you learn, you see, you understand, and you work through it in your head. I still think she hasn't worked through those losses and those failures in her life well enough.
Yeah, I said last week on Twitter that how she reacted to her loss and how Connor reacted to his loss will be a public relations case study at some point in time,
yeah,
at a university.
Probably.
Because look at what's happened to each of them since.
Yeah,
true. Ronda basically disappeared.
She lost all of her movie roles.
She lost a bunch of sponsorships.
Yeah, she couldn't
handle
it.
She just disappeared.
She didn't want to talk. She didn't want to talk to any media. But even now, she's still not over. She's not giving everything. Mm-hmm. Open up about it. But you're not coming back, so open up and talk a little bit.
On the flip side of that, look at Connor and how he reacted and what happened after that. So he loses to Nate Diaz, says, he takes full accountability.
Yeah,
says Nate's the better man.
He can make it classy.
The next fight is the biggest selling UFC pay-per-view ever. And then he goes on to fight Floyd in one of the biggest selling pay-per-views in combat sports history.
Mindset, everybody.
Yeah.
Mindset is everything. And I'll tell you, people don't understand how important it is in fighting. You can look at it in other sports. Yeah, it's great. If you have a big soccer match, I get it. But the result of the soccer match isn't you alone in a cage getting knocked out, split open, waking up and being, huh? And then there's millions of people watching you. That aspect there alone is scary. To be fight in front of people, the chance of being hurt, the chance of getting knocked out, humiliated, embarrassed, physically hurt. People have died in the ring. You know, people actually have died in the ring. It's scary, and you don't want to be embarrassed. And there's no way, I can't pass the ball and hide anymore. I'm getting shots on the ground. So, I mean, it's... Fighting is really mental, is very spiritual, and people really need to tune into that, man, or else it'll kill you. There's so many guys. That's why we have these guys who are amazing in training. You can be the best paddle. You can be the best on pads, the best on the bag, the best in gym sparring. I've seen guys who are terrible on pads, terrible in sparring, but when they fight, it's different.
Yeah,
they just shine. They come up, and all of a sudden, you're a different human being on fight day. You become superhuman. The world champions and a lot of the main guys can do both. If you can't turn that switch on and you can't block it out, you have to have 100% confidence from, you know, the deepest parts of your soul. Like, that's why when people ask me, like, hey, you want to go fight the heavyweight champ? Yeah, I'll fight him right now. I don't care. I trust my low kicks. I will never say I'll lose to anybody in this world.
Yeah, well, if you checked out, I guess, the first podcast that we did yesterday, in the interview with Darren Till, I asked him about Mike Perry, and he said, like, Mike Perry is one of the most misunderstood guys. Because people think he's crazy, but he believes everything he says.
Absolutely.
That's what Darren tells, you know, he goes, Connor, I respect believes him because he believes everything he says.
Yeah, absolutely. Connor believes all of that stuff. He thought he was going to beat Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
He 100% in his mind thought he was going to beat Floyd Mayweather, and that's why he did it.
Yeah.
If you asked me and you gave me 8-week camps, will I beat Floyd Mayweather? Absolutely.
He'd be a lot bigger than him.
That's okay. Whatever it wants. I'll cut weight to make him. Whatever it is, I would take it. I would never say I would get killed or lose to a fighter. It's just not in my mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went over this last week.
I know, but it stresses me out.
When you said you'd beat Demian Maia in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. I said give me some time.
But you're not laughing.
No,
I said give me some time. Yeah.
If you give me some time, I'll train and I'll do it.
Yeah.
Why not?
I love that mindset because to me it's just foreign. I can't do it. I don't know.
Well, that's what it said. Like my pro debut, when I went my glory debut, I fought someone. I had 7 professional fights. The guy was a legend. Murat Dereci was a legend in Turkey. I'm fighting him in his hometown in front of 11,000 people. I had my main coach couldn't come. I grabbed the training partner. I only had 3 days. I didn't know what to do. This guy had 80 professional fights. His knockout record was one of the highest knockout ratios in kickboxing. And once they offered me the fight, I'm like, okay, cool. I looked at my coach and I go, yeah, can we beat him? He's like, oh, yeah, for sure. I was like, all right, cool, let's take it. And that's all it was. I never watched tape. I didn't watch anything, and I went, and I beat him in his hometown.
So you hadn't seen any tape on him beforehand?
I didn't want to because all of his highlights were him knocking
people
out. Oh,
yeah, you mentioned that.
I was like, I don't want to watch tape on this guy knocking someone out.
Yes.
No, in my mind, I already beat him. Why do I need to watch him? He's going to fight my fight. I'm going to go in there, and he's going to fight the toughest fight of his life.
Did you watch any tape of your opponents?
Very little.
Yeah,
but going back but now
that's what your job is.
But now going back, I probably would watch more.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I got nervous.
You said you've learned a lot more.
Yeah, but that makes sense. I don't want to get nervous before a fight.
I mean, you're looking at a sample size of 80 fights of somebody. They're only going to show the best stuff probably online. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to find full fights of 80 different fights.
As long as all I need to know, and even to this day, all I would need to know is: are you southpaw or orthodox? Are you an aggressive fighter, or do you like to circle and fight on the outside? Are you good with your hands or with your kicks? I don't have to watch, but if my coach goes to me, okay, he's a forward pressure fighter, he's a southpaw, and he likes punch-to-kick combinations. Okay, I know the strategy, what I'm going to do now. So I don't need to know anything. I just need to know what he does, and I will beat him in that style. Well,
yep, there it is.
That's the championship
mindset. That's it.
But that's the I think, like I always say, that's the mindset people need to take into life. You don't have to take this into fighting. Like when I told you in the last episode, like I go into the doctors, not that the doctor's smarter than me, it's just that he decided to study in that way. You know, I will never say anyone is better than me in any aspect in life. And I think that's what makes someone a strong-minded, successful person.
You should try to become a chef. Imagine all the good food you could be eating with that mindset.
That's it.
You could just start making like crazy like souffle. You know,
I'll be the best damn chef
I
ever was.
I could be your test subject. Yeah. I'll eat food, like make some lasagna or some truffles or something. Yeah.
But again, the issue with this mindset is a lot of people think, oh, it's cocky. No, it's confidence. You need confidence. You need a positive mindset. Like, what am I going to say? No, I could never be a chef, Aaron. I'm not that good. No, I'll never be a doctor. I'm not that smart. You're already lost. Like, why are you losing? Like, win in life. Why do you have to do that?
Chef, I think if I put my mind to it, I could learn a lot and come up with interesting dishes because I'm a creative thinker.
Yeah.
Like, whenever I bake stuff or whatever at home, my wife's always like, oh, you didn't use the teaspoon. You just put – I'm like – it doesn't like you don't need to follow things to an exact, you know,
absolutely,
to an exact code.
Does it taste good at the end?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, but that's the learning process.
That's the learning process. So I think with that I could, because I have an interest in food. I think it's an interesting, but with being a doctor, I wouldn't be able to learn the materials. I would zone out.
Well, you'd force yourself.
No, I can't do it.
Well, you're a super intelligent guy.
My brain can't focus.
You're just not interested in it?
Yeah, I just don't think I'd be able to focus on...
Look at the ability to understand and all the knowledge you know in UFC. You're one of the most knowledgeable, you know, journalists and people I've ever heard.
Yeah, well, it takes a long time.
Yeah, so does school and education. If you did 8 hours a day studying the medical book,
yeah,
bang, you
like
can
one
do
guy
it.
That impresses the hell out of me is James Lynch, who lives here, because he does like 4 or 5 interviews a day with a lot, and most of the time it's people that are like regional fighters, people that, you know, he thinks are coming up.
Yeah,
and he learns so much about them, and he knows so much about them, and he retains so much information. Like, that's just reps, and that's something I can't do because I'm in an office.
Yeah.
He's at home, and he's able to do. And even when he was working in an office, he'd come home. At the time, he didn't have any kids. He'd come home, and he'd sit, and he'd do, 3-4 hours of interviews and just learn, and he learns about all these people. Like, if I called him right now and said, tell me about Mike Rodriguez, he's probably interviewed the guy 3 times.
Yeah. See, I think I feel like I'm at, like, a capacity of how much I could know now. Like, it's like, with all the glory stuff, I need to know everything about every single glory fighter. So now when you're adding all this UFC stuff, it's hard for me to really remember the stats and the numbers and who fought who. And there's just, because again, like this last week, like I've been everything glory. So now when it comes back to the UFC, it's like I don't remember a lot of who fought who. And because it's not my number one, sport, and it's not my full-time job now. So it's like it's hard to remember names and stats. But I mean, that's where I think you're incredible.
Yeah, well, I work on it a lot. I mean, the thing that I find I'm not as good at is remembering who's fighting who down the line. Like, I saw that there's a press conference for UFC's Utica card on Thursday, and Gregor Gillespie's going to be there. Like, oh, I guess he must be fighting on the card. I should see who, like, I should tweet out that I guess, he's going to be at this thing, and I guess that means he's going to be on the card. And then I looked, and it's like his fight's already been announced, and it was, like, announced weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing, because there's so many cards.
Oh, it's hard.
It's hard for me to remember who's fighting who.
Yeah, it's
way. But James retains that information. Like, if I called James and been like, hey, tell me about Mike Rodriguez, and who's Gregor Gillespie fighting next? He'll know.
Yeah, there's some people that just have that crazy memory.
Yeah, and Helwani,
I don't have that.
Ariel Helwani, if you say UFC 68, he'll tell you like what the main event was, where it was, and how it, like I'd have to sit and study that. Not that I couldn't. Like you said, I think I could sit and study all of the different cards and remember all that with reps, but he's just got this photographic memory that probably helps him so much.
Yeah,
and
growing up,
I had one also. I had a very photographic. I could memorize baseball stats, no problem. My dad would take a baseball card and be like, what was so-and-so's ERA? How many strikeouts did he get? And I'd know.
Yeah, see, I never had that.
Yeah.
See, but even me, like when I look at back in my university side, I wouldn't say I was as gifted academically as my friends who are now, one of my best friends is Dr. Payne on 680 radio. Like he's like, owns many chiropractic clinics, and my other friend's a doctor.
You're
like,
going to go to someone named Dr. Payne for your back? That's it. A chiropractor?
Yeah, Luigi Nally is amazing. All of those things, like they were more naturally gifted academically. So they'd have to read something maybe once or twice, and then they remembered for the whole course. For me, I had to read it 10 times, and then I had to study it again during the exam where they're like, no, we remember we talked about this a month ago. I was like, I don't remember a month ago. Like, I have so many other things going in my mind, but they just had that memory and that focus. So I just had to do a little bit more study work. It didn't mean, they're just more gifted at remembering than I was. I just had to put more effort and energy in understanding and learning. But I did it, and we got equally, the grades.
I was excellent at BSing. That's how I got through university.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like that.
Just I'd get a question. I'd be able to write something that came off as smart enough to make sense.
Just add those fluffy words.
Yeah,
and big
like
words
I'd be able to beef
there.
Something up and just use like rational thinking rather than like book thinking.
Yeah.
It wasn't until my last year of university that I learned how to actually study for exams.
Yeah,
I'd take like flashcards and I'd learn like what's this, what's that, and about and then memorize it that way. Like I did that in groups and I found that I was doing much easier for me.
See, I was more of a I'm just gonna remember for the test and then I don't care after. I'm
yeah,
gonna
I
cram
like
it
too.
In. I'm gonna just remember this and then I'll never remember again.
Yeah,
that's my style.
But I was good. I went to all the different lectures. A lot of people didn't go to all the lectures.
No, I liked the lectures.
And I used to go to the lectures and I'd write notes.
Notes.
And when I was writing things down, I'd somehow retain it.
Oh, I was that goof student who'd write every single word down. I'd be scrambling, trying to get every single word. What did the professor say? And I was like, I missed the and the's when I first started. And I was like, I got to just chill.
Yeah, you got to just do little notes.
You got to learn.
Yeah. There you go. If you're listening to the show and you haven't got to university yet, you've just learned on how to get through it. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Matt Brown's out of UFC Fight Night Glendale.
Which that's disappointing.
That's very,
They're still
trying
I think
to keep Carlos Condit.
Yeah,
just combined his name to Condos.
Condos, I like that.
Condos. Yeah, I'm sure they'll be able to find something, but it's just not as cool of a fight as Matt Brown versus Carlos Condit.
Yeah. And how did he say how he hurt his ACL?
Yeah, torn ACL. Mm. Tough break. An actual tough break.
Yeah.
Stephen Thompson says he had never heard of Darren Till until he was opposed to fight him. It's the same thing Cerrone said.
Yeah.
So it's probably not a good look.
I don't know. Darren Till did a good job at promoting himself to jump the ranks he did. I know Wonderboy's a little upset that he was kind of overlooked for that interim title. Like, why is it that Colby and Dos Anjos got it?
They can't do Thompson versus Woodley for a third time.
Well, if they did Thompson and RDA for the interim,
yeah, but then
why did Colby
Thompson,
get it?
Then they'd have to do Thompson versus Woodley again. And
they're gonna have to do it eventually.
No, maybe. It depends on what happens with Darren Till. Now, I mentioned to Darren Till, the thing that shocked me with him is he's only fought on TV in North America once, and it was his debut. It was on Fox Sports 1. Everything else has been on Fight Pass.
Yeah.
And yet this guy's been able to build.
How many UFC fights does he have? 3 or 4?
I think 4. 4 or 5.
Yeah, I had no idea who he was until Cerrone, right?
Yeah, and
I think that's everyone's
I said to him, I go, how did you become such a big name? He thanked Joe Rogan. He said, Joe Rogan has been talking about me forever.
And a lot of it, I think, was Brandon Schaub, because Brandon Schaub was like, who the heck's this guy fighting Cerrone? And then he kept mentioning him and being like, oh, he's legit. And all of a sudden, he built a good name for himself, and he learned how to talk, throwing a lot of F-bombs in that.
They're doing a media day for him in New York this week. Yeah. And then they're also doing a press conference, according to Ariel Helwani, featuring him and Wonder Boy and a bunch of the other, like Stipe and Cormier, like a big press conference.
He's a name you can build. I like it.
Yeah, the second quarter. Yeah, absolutely. So this week, a ton of UFC 223 content that TSN will be hosting. We have 2 Robin Black features, one on Joanna and Rose that's already available on tsn.ca/UFC. I'll have a lot of exclusive one-on-ones of some of the people I just mentioned to Joe, as well as a lot of the fighters involved with UFC 223. The prelims air at 8 p.m. Eastern on TSN 5, and we'll have post-fight analysis from Robin Black. Next week, we'll discuss, we'll recap UFC 223 and talk about UFC Glendale, which features a main event between Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier.
That's tough.
Justin and Dustin. You can check out Joseph Altolini on YouTube. What's your latest videos? What do you got on the fly right now?
My last one I posted is how to fight a taller opponent.
Oh, cool.
I did a short pressure fighter. Now I have fighting a taller opponent. And this video releasing this week is going to be about distance control. I talk about it all the time, and I don't think people really understand what distance control is. And I, in my opinion, and most other true martial artists will tell you, it's the most important thing in fighting. So you got to understand what close range is, mid range, and long range. And I explained it in the video.
Yeah, for sure. And we talked about Tom Dukinwa, his last fight, and how distance was such a factor for him.
Yeah.
Even though some people, for whatever reason, thought he lost that fight. I wasn't among them. And, of course, Bazooka Kickboxing.
Yeah,
Progress
680
Road.
Progress Avenue. I'm going right after here. So I teach. I even come to my classes. We have I don't teach the beginner class anymore, but I have intermediate classes that go on the same time, and you can climb the ranks. I'm about learning martial arts and going through the process the right way. You need the basics, so yeah, come learn. You should even see our Bazooka page. Our fighters are dominating. We're doing really well, so yeah, come join Team Bazooka.
Speaking of intermediate, I got my orange belt test card. Yeah. I moved to green yesterday.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's awesome.
What testing did you do? What did you have to do for it?
Oh, I have to do the test. I just got the card.
Okay.
That says you're ready for the test, and the test is May 19th.
All right.
Yeah.
So you have to do, what do you guys call them? Patterns, katas?
We've got to do, forms.
You call them forms?
Yeah. I have to do...
We called them patterns in Taekwondo.
Yeah. What was it called? What's the main form that we've got to do? I don't know why I'm blanking on this now, because it's only one. But we have to do one really
Hopefully
long.
Hopefully, your
form.
Sensei doesn't listen to this,
yeah,
and he's
going
to take your card back.
I think that's why I'm getting nervous in case he's listening.
He's just going to take your card. You're done.
I have to do one really long form and rising sun. We have to do rising sun form, and we have to do break falls, forward and backwards break falls. We have to do
board breaking.
Not yet.
Okay,
that's I think intermediate. Side kicks. I think we have to do 360 kicks.
Okay,
and. Yeah, a couple other things that probably aren't coming to mind right now. But I'm ready. I'm good. I could do it right now and pass. No problem. All right, well, we're being kicked out of here, and we're done anyway, so we'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in, and as I mentioned, UFC 223 recap and UFC Glendale preview.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.